Hello and welcome back to Everyday Oral Surgery. This is your host, Dr. Grant Stuckey. I'm an oral maxillofacial surgeon practicing in Denver, Colorado, and I really appreciate you tuning into the episode today. Thanks to all those who have emailed and texted me ideas about topics for the podcast or guests they want to hear from. If you would like to be a guest on the show or know someone you'd like to hear from, please email me at grantstuckey@gmail.com. Also, please visit our website, everydayoralsurgery.com, if you'd like to search the podcast in an easier way by topic. We'd like to hear from everyone and really appreciate you guys listening. Keep in mind that everything we're discussing here is based on personal experience and opinions, so please supplement everything you're learning here with approved research studies. Without further ado, please enjoy today's episode. All right, welcome to another episode. Today I'm with Dr. Shahid Aziz. He is an oral and maxillofacial surgeon practicing in New Jersey. Shahid, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. I was wondering if you could just kind of give us a brief history of your training and your current practice setup.
Sure. Well, I grew up in New Jersey and went to Harvard for dental school and Columbia for medical school. I did my OMS training at Columbia. I finished in 2002. And immediately following that, I became faculty at Rutgers and spent the last 20 years at Rutgers. And then this past year, 2022, I made a transition from Rutgers to becoming the inaugural division director, oral and maxillofacial surgery at Hackensack Meridian, which is a large health network here in New Jersey. And I've sort of been tasked with starting a training program. And, you know, while at Rutgers, I developed a really large practice in orthognathic surgery to the point now I'm doing around 250 cases a year. And I brought all that to Hackensack. And, you know, we've been there now not quite a year, but it's going pretty well.
That's terrific. And so are you focusing mostly on orthognathics or what other stuff are you doing these days?
Well, I do full scope, a little bit of everything. Orthognathics and trauma are primarily what I do, but I do full scope oral surgery as well as some expanded scope stuff like TMJ replacements and cleft surgery.
Awesome. That's terrific. And then recently I was reading an Amos Today article that kind of mentioned you and some of the work that's going on internationally with some of the efforts to get residents and other surgeons out to kind of do more service type work. Can you just talk a little bit about your involvement with that?
Sure. It starts when I was a resident at Columbia. And my chair at the time was Steve Roser, who was really big in international work. Take a step back, my family, so I'm originally half, my father was from Bangladesh, so I'm half Bengali, and my mother was from Pakistan. And so as a child growing up, both of them were scientists. We worked for the World Health Organization, WHO. As a result, we traveled around the world quite a bit until I was around 10. And so I had that little bit of a travel bug in me, really understood what it was like to live internationally. And then when I started training with Dr. Roser, he would lead surgical missions globally, primarily at the time in South America. So I had the opportunity to go on surgical missions with him. Once I finished training and I got a little more experience under my belt, I found out through family that there's a huge need for facial cleft surgery in Bangladesh, which is where my father's family is from. And in 2006, I started going to Bangladesh and created an organization called Smile Bangladesh. And we've been going to Bangladesh twice a year ever since. We've done 27 missions, I think, and treated almost 2,000 kids for free. So that's sort of in a nutshell what we've been doing. In the last 5-6 years, we've sort of expanded from just doing cleft surgery to orthognathic surgery as well, because there's a huge interest and need for that sort of surgery. And we spend a lot of time not just doing the surgery, but a lot of time teaching as well. And so I go twice a year, 2 to 3 weeks each trip, so up to 6 weeks a year on doing cleft and orthognathic surgery out there.
Wow, that's amazing. Who's helping you kind of set this all up and make sure, you know, all that's set in order?
Sure. So initially when we started, it was primarily just me. And then I met somebody by the name of Christina Rosario, who's from Bangladesh. And at the time in 2006 was running a large NGO or non-governmental organization in Bangladesh. She, by coincidence, 2 years later, emigrated to New Jersey, where her son was going to Seton Hall. And we became fast friends. And she, using her connections, really helped us develop our missions and our hospital sites and that sort of thing. So now she is the person that sort of logistically coordinates everything we do. So really, she and I run the organization Smile Bangladesh together. And again, it evolved from something very small to something now that has grown into something I never imagined, which is a really relatively well-known organization internally in Bangladesh, and I think within American Oral Surgery as well. You know, and so because of Christina's connections and her hard work, we've been able to go to all kinds of rural spots throughout Bangladesh, because really the thing about cleft surgery in Bangladesh, a lot of the patients don't have access to care or don't even know that there is opportunity for care. And so by going to their rural locations, going to them as opposed to staying in the capital and having them come to us, we actually are able to treat a lot more patients. And in large part, it's thanks to her and her hard work and her connections. So that's sort of how we've evolved.
That's cool. And when you do go, what's usually like your team size and what other doctors are going with you?
Sure. So, you know, typically we take myself and three other surgeons, either plastic surgeons or oral maxillofacial surgeons. And then we have five anesthesiologists. Typically they're pediatric trained anesthesiologists and a couple nurses and Christina. And then we take surgical residents as well. My best friend, who was my dental school classmate, Dr. Jose Marchena, who is faculty at UT Houston's oral surgery program, has been traveling with me for most of this experience. And the other person who's really involved is Dr. John Wallace, who's a oral surgeon in Dallas, who trained at Parkland and did Dr. Posnick's fellowship as well. So those are the two constants that we've had for nearly 20 years. And the nice thing also is because, you know, John's affiliated with the Parkland program, Jose with the Houston program, and I'm currently affiliated with both the Rutgers program and the Montefiore program in New York City, we have the opportunity to bring residents from the programs we're affiliated with. But in addition, we've opened it up to residents nationwide. And so we've probably had over the last 15, 18 years, I would say at least 120 to 125 residents go on our missions, probably more, to be honest. And all of them, by and large, say it's one of the best experiences that they've ever had. And then the other nice thing is the foundation started something called the Give Fellowship, which is a scholarship to allow residents to get some funding from the OMS Foundation to offset the costs of their travel, et cetera. So we've had, usually take about four oral surgery residents on each mission. And, you know, the oral surgery community and the resident community in particular is small. So we get now in pretty high demand and a lot of people asking to go. So, you know, we've been lucky. We have a core group of people that go, and now we're able to not just educate the surgeons in Bangladesh and work with them, but also bring American surgeons in training, residents on these missions to hopefully inspire them to give back in their career.
Oh, that's so cool. And pretty incredible that they can repeatedly say that this is one of the best experiences they're having in their life. I'm sure it's pretty awesome to be able to offer that to people who just usually don't have access to that type of care. Very cool. So, when you're saying this is open nationwide, are residents, you know, from other programs that you three doctors kind of aren't associated with, do they have to kind of coordinate this with their own program directors, or how kind of do they get involved with this?
So typically what happens is they reach out to me and I will then steer them towards the foundation to apply for the Give Scholarship. And typically we have about 4 to 5 slots per trip set aside for oral surgery residents. And typically we bring a chief resident because those at that level of training will get the most out of going on a mission. And usually it's through word of mouth that people reach out to me. And now we have sort of a waiting list of people who want to go. You know, this, we have a mission coming up in 2 weeks, and, you know, we have residents from all across the country from different programs that are participating, you know, Montefiore, Howard, a couple other programs, and it's a great experience for these guys.
Is it possible for non-residents to go, or how do you deal with that situation? Do you have people ask about that?
Yeah, once in a while, we will have an oral surgeon who's interested in learning more about international work and cleft surgery has to go. And if we can accommodate them, you know, certainly, you know, they're welcome to go. But outside of the core group of surgeons that we take to the core group of attending surgeons, the assistant surgeons, we try to primarily have them as the resident at the resident level. Because again, as an educator for the last 20 plus years in American oral maxillofacial surgery, it's important to me to provide residents that opportunity. But once in a while, we'll get somebody who's interested in going. And if I can accommodate them, I will.
That's terrific. What is just ballpark cost of this, you know, for per person who goes?
Well, so everyone pays their airfare. So coach airfare, and they also cover their visa, probably around $1,200 to $1,500. And then the organization, Smile Bangladesh, we cover all the in-country expenses, which, you know, for a team of 16, 17 people, which is our average team size, runs about $40,000 to $45,000. And so I'm sort of not just the person who leads the missions and runs the organization, but I'm also sort of the fundraiser. And so we have to fundraise at least $100,000 a year to manage the two missions plus additional costs. And we've been fairly successful, but it's a lot of work. And with the advent of social media in the last 5 years, we've been able to really kick up our game as far as fundraising, because we do have a couple individuals who are involved in our social media platform and help us fundraise. I'm pretty aggressive when it comes to trying to get grants from different corporations. And John Wallace has this amazing fundraiser in Dallas every September that really has also generated a great source of income every year for us. So we do have to fundraise. And what falls short, typically I will pay out of my pocket just to keep everything going. But for the last couple of years, we've been pretty good that we haven't had to go that route.
Sounds good. And I was going to ask, how many people or patients do you usually treat during each time you're there?
It's usually between 50 and 70, depending on the length of the mission and depending on where we're going and what we're doing. Typically, because we combine orthognathics with cleft surgery, we often will go initially to a site in the capital, Dhaka, because we're going to be doing orthognathics in a larger hospital setting simply because of the complexity of the surgery. And we'll typically do maybe 10 surgeries over the course of 3 or 4 days. And then we'll move on to a second site where we'll be for a week and operate for 5-6 days and do, depending on the number of tables we're running, 50, 60 plus.
Does it vary as far as what procedure you're doing, or what's the usual breakdown, like percent of, you know, cleft surgery?
Typically, we'll do 8 to 10 orthognathics in a mission. Part of the rate limiting step is that we have to bring the plates and screws and a lot of the instrumentation. So we get support from the CMF companies in the States to donate plates and screws. We purchased a drill system that we sort of lug back and forth. I've been very lucky that I have a couple really great Stryker reps that have come on the missions, and they usually bring a lot of this stuff with them. So I personally don't have to worry about lugging it. They do it, which is great. So the rate limiting step for the orthognathic is really how much equipment we can get donated and how many cases we can plan. And then we go on and do lip and palate surgery the following, you know, week. And then we'll again do 50 to 60 of those, lips and palates. Sometimes we'll get some facial clefting. And depending on the case, you know, sometimes we'll do some cleft rhinoplasties, things like that. Again, with that sort of thing, we have plenty of equipment. We have a storage warehouse in Dhaka where we keep most of our supplies. So, and we replenish them every time we go out there. So it's a pretty well-organized machine that we've kind of created now. And that's sort of the typical setup for what we do.
Nice. And do you have like a local doctor or somebody there who's kind of, you know, setting up the cases and showing you, okay, here's what you're going to be dealing with and kind of help you prepare for this?
Yeah, so we have a couple local surgeons that help us when there are issues after we leave. And in addition, you know, there a lot of planning goes into the missions where we're in touch with whatever site, whatever hospital or organization is sponsoring us or hosting us. We're in touch with them about, you know, several months in advance about the cases that we want and the criteria for selection. And we've been doing it so long now, and we go to the same sort of sites, that they typically know in any way what we can and can't do and what's sort of within our comfort zone. When it comes to orthognathics, it's a little more complicated. You know, we typically ask for photos and we get a CT scan and models either shipped to me, or if we know somebody in Bangladesh who may be traveling to the U.S., try to get those items to that person. And then we meet them in the U.S. and, you know, grab the models and the CD of this CT scan, and then I VSP everything so I can get splints made. So, you know, for example, we're going in 2 weeks to our next camp, our next mission, and one of Christina's friends just brought like 10 or 12 CDs and models with him, and he got to D.C. yesterday. So the local striker rep in D.C. is going to pick up all that stuff and then send it to medical modeling to allow us to VSP it next week, and they'll generate splints for us that we bring with us.
Wow. So it sounds like kind of a lot of work, and I'm sure it's evolved over time, but how awesome that you've been able to establish this and set up this well-oiled machine. Very, very cool. So for residents who are listening that maybe have interest in this, is it best for them to email you, or what's the best way to go about trying to get involved with this?
Yeah, the best way is to contact me, and there's different ways. You know, they can look me up through the Rutgers website. I still have a Rutgers email, or the Hackensack Meridian website, or message me through our social media, whether it's our Instagram or our social media Facebook page, or go to our website, and there's a place where they can contact us. So those are all different options of getting in touch with me. More often than not, you know, it's a small world in oral surgery, and especially at the resident level. So oftentimes it's just word of mouth, and they just talk to a resident who's going or is gone or knows me. And again, being in academia for 20 years, the residents will figure out a way to reach me.
Okay. Excellent. Appreciate you being willing to kind of, you know, field calls, so to speak, and talk to residents who are interested.
Yeah, I would add that, you know, we have two missions a year, November and March, and we can take up to 5 residents, sometimes 6 residents per trip. If people are interested, they have to get in touch with me at least 6 months in advance before one of those trips. And it's typically limited to chief residents. So that's basically some of the rules.
Okay, so probably good for them to get in touch with you during their year before chief year to kind of set it
right.
up.
Yeah, so they can kind of get on the list, and then we go from there. And again, I try to be as inclusive as I can. If somebody's interested, I really try to get them on board. And, you know, I do a little background checking as far as talking to their program director and you know, that sort of thing to make sure. And, you know, and there's some ground rules that have to be followed. One of the things that's so important about the experience, I think, is developing, you know, cultural competency. And you're dealing with a different culture. And, you know, one of the things that the opportunity gives is not just to make them tessier, make them, you know, cuff surgeon. It'll give them a lot more experience because it's an intense experience. You know, you're one-on-one with another attending surgeon. You're going to do 5 cuffs in a day. So it's an intense experience over 4 or 5 days of surgery, being able to do that. But it's more for them to also see what it's like to give back and inspire them to give back in some way, shape, or form. It doesn't have to necessarily be international work. It could be domestically, locally, whatever. But also from a cultural level, and develop that sense of cultural competency, because that's so important, I think, in our practice as surgeons. Because, you know, we're a melting pot in this country, and we deal with all types of cultures. And I think that's a really nice way for these guys to learn how to deal with different cultures.
Oh, for sure. That's a huge probably benefit of the mission and experience, to get that cultural experience and kind of see how you do it and kind of learn from you. Another question I had for you is just maybe a more broad question that you could help our listeners with. But we have, you know, a big group of residents and dental students even young surgeons who listen to this podcast and are trying to figure out kind of what to do with their careers. What type of advice would you give to, you know, the young resident who's trying to figure out, you know, what pathway to take their career in?
Well, I would say that's an interesting question. I would tell any resident that at the end of the day, do what makes them happiest. Go to a part of the country that they want to go to and, you know, make sure you got plenty of family support with whatever you do in life. Because at the end of the day, you know, money comes and goes, family doesn't. And I think that having good family support and having a good family structure support system is really important. As far as a career path, it's sort of interesting now with the advent of DSOs. It's very difficult for residents coming out with such a significant amount of debt not to be attracted to a DSO, where they're making an inordinate amount of money immediately out of residency doing, you know, office-based surgery. And I get that. But I think we need to cultivate academic surgeons. And a lot of people think if you go into academics, you're not going to be able to make the same level of income or whatever that you would make going into private practice. Now, that's not necessarily true. I've done extremely well. I have to work very hard, but I've done extremely well in my full scope practice. And I think that there's a lot of opportunity coming up in academics because a lot of academics are now retiring. So I think there's a lot of opportunity in academic oral maxillofacial surgery. And I would also tell residents to try to practice full scope surgery. If they don't go to academics, try to practice full scope oral surgery, get hospital privileges and try to do trauma and take call. I would say try to get affiliated with their local training program as well. That's a good way to keep their skills sharp. So I think this is a great time for these young people to go on to a career in oral surgery. And there's so many venues and options. And I think really at the end of the day, you know, you have to be happy. And at the end of the day, happiness comes, I think, with being where you want to be geographically and having a good support system at home. And then, you know, I would just say, think about not just being an office-based surgeon, but, you know, giving back to your local training program or going into academics. And I think there's a lot of benefits of academics. I mean, it's a joy to train residents. It's a joy to residents will always make you feel young, just being around them. And I think there's a lot of benefit in doing that. And, you know, the opportunity to practice hospital-based oral surgery is really a lot of fun as well. So again, a lot of different options. I think that at the end of the day, they should do what makes them happiest. And you need good family support, whatever you do.
I love that. I appreciate you kind of expounding on some of your thoughts on how to determine that, because I think that's really helpful for our listeners and residents to hear a lot of different perspectives. So that's terrific. Well, I appreciate you taking the time kind of this morning to explain Smile Bangladesh and some of the things you're doing. And hopefully that information can help some of our listeners get involved with this. We end every podcast with some rapid fire questions, which are very easy, so don't stress. But here's the first one for you is, what's the best book you've read in the past year?
I'm a big James Patterson fan, so I don't remember the name of it, but I read one of his books recently.
Okay. Excellent. What type of books are those?
Those are typically mystery novels.
Okay. Excellent. What has been the most helpful non-oral surgery thing you've done or you do in your life to help you with your daily oral surgery skills?
Oh, I love tinkering with things, whether it's with my cars, whether it's around the house. So just playing around with things, you know, just sort of, there's a lot of sort of connection between being a mechanic and being a surgeon in the sense that it's all hand skills and thought. So, you know, I do like kind of tinkering with things as well.
Excellent. I have to follow up question with that one. Do you do any carpentry or any woodworking or no?
No. I used to when I was younger. Now I am a little more careful simply because as a surgeon, your hands are your most important aspect of your career. So I'm a little more careful now. When I was younger, I certainly did a little bit, but now even with, you know, careful with everything I do, when I tinker with my cars, I'm still very careful when I you know, to work in that around the house or in the yard. I'm still very careful with using any saws or whatever equipment. Because again, as a surgeon, we all know our hands are vital to our careers.
Yes. Note to listeners, be careful when you're around saws and power tools.
Yeah.
The next question, what forceps do you use to remove tooth number 14?
You know, I use the upper universal at 150. The interesting thing is I don't often elevate. I will put it on and I use the forceps sort of as an elevator to get it out.
Okay. Good to know. How about, what is your favorite quote?
Some of my mentors in my training would often say, don't F it up. And I sort of embrace that when I speak to my residents. I use that a lot.
Nice. Don't screw it up. Yes. And I assume being able not to F it up requires preparation and kind of correct. Forethought and yep. all that stuff that goes into it.
Yeah. And it's always also, I have to admit, a little fun to make a resident sweat a little bit while you're watching them. So it's all good fun, but there's also, you want them to be come in prepared and think through their moves. So,
yep, for sure.
Yeah.
How about a best movie or series that you've watched in the past year or two?
You know, during the lockdown, my significant other and I got through all 10 seasons of Hawaii Five-0, the new Hawaii Five-0, 200-odd episodes. So that was, I don't have a ton of time to watch TV, but during the lockdown, we got through that. And then, you know, my kids and I got through Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is hilarious. And so those are the two that come to mind.
Okay. Sounds good. I have not gotten around to watching those yet, so I'll put those on my list.
Definitely, you should.
That's awesome. All right. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I love talking to you. And if you're okay with it, I can include your email in our show notes just please. So people could reach out to you.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Everyday Oral Surgery. Once again, please email me at grantstuckey@gmail.com if you have any topics you'd like to hear about, guests you'd like to hear from, or if you yourself would love to be a guest, please, please email me or text me at 720-441-6059. And I also just love hearing from people. If you enjoy the podcast or, you know, learn something from it or talk to a friend or connected with someone because of the podcast, that just makes my day. So please shoot that correspondence over to me and I will see you on the next episode. Thank you.